Okay, so I want to do with you tonight is read a section of Chumash that's probably familiar to you. I was going to start with an agenda that I wish to convince you in many ways that Medrash is more pshat than pshat. And so the examples we're picking are slightly polemical in that regard. So what we're going to do is we're going to read through a section of Chumash. I'm going to try and point out what I think are key structural features of the text. Then we're going to read how, particularly how Rashbam relates to some of those issues. And then we'll read a series of Midrashim and see how the Midrashim relate to those issues. And hopefully that will create more of a sense of what Midrash is. It also turns out that it's a really cool text to start with, and the Midrashim are awesome. So just wait for them. The Midrashim are completely awesome. Okay, so we turn the page. So we're in Bereishit Yudchet. This is the story of Avraham at Sodom. And so it begins by saying that God said, what is missing? God said to whom, right? Okay, God said, am I hiding from Avraham that which I am doing? Okay. And then we have the following. It says, and Avraham will be a great and powerful nation, and all the nations of the land will be, depending on how you translate this, what do you think Nivruchu means?
Blessed through
him. Blessed through him, right? So that's what Rashi says, say. Anybody know what Rashbam says? Rashbam says, we'll intermarry with him. That all the nations of the world will be grafted onto him. Language of Mavrichu Markiv. So this, I'm just going to use this as an illustration for the difference between Pshat and Drash, to my mind, is that the way I think that Chazal read, and therefore the way Midrash reads, is that every text has its melody and its harmonies. And the goal is to read the melody and the harmonies together. The melody is what happens if you translate the words straight. One of the sense of the harmonies are all the other possible things the words could mean, which are not the primary translation. So in this case, what Rashbam is picking up on is that we have a different grammatical way of saying, and they will be blessed through you, which is v'hitbarchu v'cha, kol goyei haaretz. So why does it say v'nivruchu? So Rashbam, however, is committed to the univocality of the text. The text can only mean one thing. So he's so convinced by this grammatical point that he thinks v'nivruchu is lashon mavrich u'markiv. Now, it's a language of grafting. Why you can interchange the resh chaf and barich. Really, lavrich is to kneel. Right? And so, but Rashbam assumes, as it seems true from the Gemara, that lehavrich and leharkiv are versions of the same shoresh. But the Medrash says that God said to Avraham, I have two brachot to graft onto you. Right, so the Medrash reads the melody and the harmony together. Right, the primary meaning is bracha, but the reason it uses the language of v'nivruchu is to create the harmonic of grafting. Rashbam decides it's only grafting, which seems really, really difficult in context. But either Rashbam has a really good grammatical point, so the Medrash puts the two of those together. Okay, so Avraham will be a great nation, and all the nations of the world will bless/intermarry with him. Ki yedativ, because either I have known him or I have identified him, or I have appointed him, so that he will command his sons and his house after him, and they will guard the path of God to do justice, or tzaka'u mishpat, so that Hashem will bring in Avraham all that he spoke to him. So what I want to point out is that there are really three different sections and two so that clauses. The first thing, right, God says, am I hiding from Avraham that which I am doing? Avraham will be a great and powerful nation, and all the nations of the land will, let's say, be blessed through him, because I have known him, so that he will command his sons and they will guard Derech Hashem to do tzakal mishpat. So what I'm interested in, first of all, is the compound nature of what appears to be the answer to the question, the Avraham, right, Amin Chaseani me Avraham Asher Ani Oseh. Okay, we go on, right, God says, what's missing?
To whom?
Okay, so the first one is V'Hashem Amar, and the second one is V'Yomer Hashem. What's the difference between V'Hashem Amar and V'Yomer Hashem?
It shows that, like, what's the beginning of the Nuvinyan, and when it's connecting to the previous Nuvinyan.
Not bad. Sharper than that. Usually,
Hashem is to some.
V'Hashem Amar means it had. It's, I think the grammarians. I see that there aren't any gills here, but for the grammarians among you, right? V'Hashem Amar means that it had already happened. It's a pluperfect, right? Whereas Vayomer Hashem is sequential. So V'Hashem Amar is the background to the story, and Vayomer Hashem is when the story starts. Okay, so Hashem had said, we don't know to whom, and now Hashem says, we don't know to whom. The cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and their sin is it was a thing. I'll go down and I'll see if they've really done as bad as it seems. Okay, then we skip. Then after God finishes his speech, Vayifnu mishama anashim. Then we go back to the people who appeared to Avram, and they go to Sodom, and Avram is still standing before God. Okay, just basic background on the story. There's a paradox at the very beginning of the story. Vayira Hashem el Avram. God appears to Avram, and what's the next thing that happens? Avram lifts his eyes and sees. So the basic question is, right? Rashi says what? How does Rashi resolve this problem? God appears to Avram. God never appears to Avram. So what happened? That's not Rashi. No. Rashi says that that Avram said to God, "Excuse me, you'll have to wait for a moment because I have some guests to welcome." Because Rashi does not read, right? Rashi says that first God appeared to Avram, and then something else happened. So God told Avram to wait. Sorry, Avram told God to wait. Right? Then when he finished speaking to God, right, then he went back and spoke to the angels. Rashbam and Rambam both say that how did God appear to Avram? In the form of angels. But very, very differently. Rashbam says that God appeared to Avram in the form of angels, and all this really happens in the real world. And the Rambam famously says that whenever there are angels, you're dreaming. And so the Rambam says this entire parsha is a dream. Until what's the biggest support for Rambam's position? When does the dream end?
In the morning.
When do dreams end?
When you wake up.
And that's one of the most amazing things about this story. Is that Avram argues with God, and then in the morning he wakes up and discovers that he lost. How did he sleep? So Rambam has a very simple solution. He was asleep during the argument. Right? That's the basic frame of the story. Right? So the angels go, and Avram is still standing before God, either as part of his dream, or because, right, Rashi says that, well, really, it's God is still waiting for Avram. But it would be rude to describe God as waiting for Avram, so this we call it tikkun sofrim, that the Torah writes it backwards to protect God's honor, and we say Avram is still standing before God, but really God is still standing before Avram. And that makes an enormous difference, which relates to our opening pasuk, because the question is, who really wants this conversation? Is it Avram really wants this conversation? Or does God really want this conversation? According to Rashi, right, it's God who really wants this conversation. Right, to the point that he's even willing to be put on hold. Right? Hi, this is God. I'm sorry, Avram Avinu was busy right now taking care of him, I guess. Would you please hold for the next several hours? Sure. Right, so Avram finishes, and the people leave, and then we're back to God. Okay, then Avram has the whole dialogue with God about stone, which ends Vayelech Hashem Kasher Kilal Daber Avram, that God left when he had finished speaking to Avram. So the question there is, was Avram finished speaking to God? Right, God left when he was finished speaking to Avram, but it's not clear whether Avram still wanted to speak or not. And that also changes, just like we're not sure who insists on the beginning of the conversation. So too, we're not sure whether the conversation ends with Avram satisfied or not. In between, you have a dialogue which goes as follows. So first, Avram gets up and he says, "Will you wipe out the righteous together with the wicked? Maybe there are 50 righteous people in the city. Will you destroy and not have mercy on the place because of the 50 righteous people in their midst. Chalila lecha, me'asot kadavar hazeh, lehamit tzadikim rasha." Right, this is a powerful moral argument. Okay, what does God say? Good point. What's Avram's response? Well, 50, maybe 45. So we have a sudden transition from this incredibly powerful moral rhetoric to haggling in a bazaar. 50, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10. Now, you know, then right then the question is, God walks away. So you walk away because Avram's already gotten the price too low, it's not worth selling anymore? Right, or because the deal isn't made? Right, that's the ambiguity there. But here's the thing I want to say. So there's only one moment where there's a moral, where Avram makes a really powerful moral statement, and he accuses God of this. And he says, God, will you destroy the righteous together with the wicked? Is this fair? Is there any hint that God intended to destroy the righteous together with the wicked? No. Because where does Avram move? After saying, will you destroy the righteous together with the wicked, what's the next thing Avram asks for? Save the wicked for the right. Save the wicked together with the righteous. What's the one thing that ever comes up? Save the righteous, kill the wicked. Right, that's the one thing that never shows up. Right, Avram never. Right. Which means, what's the one thing? Right, what do we call when you save the righteous and you kill the wicked? What's a good one word description of what happens then?
Justice.
Justice. The one thing that is never considered in this entire story is mishpat. Now that's really kind of interesting. I have a story which is organized around an accusation, apparently. But the one thing which is never considered is mishpat. We go one end, which is destroying the righteous together with the wicked. It turns out God never considered that. So the next end is let's save the righteous together with the wicked.
Well, but I mean, God could have answered. No, I'm only going to destroy the wicked ones. I'll leave
he couldn't, right? No, so God, Avram, God never seems to have considered mishpat. Avram never considers mishpat. The only thing is, Avram says, "A shofet kol haaretz lo yaaseh mishpat."
Well, and God says, "I'm going to go see if it's really like their reputation, as it were, right?"
Uh-huh.
Right? Zakat tzedom v'amaraki rabba v'chatatam kabemod er danav eret.
Yeah.
Right. So he seems to be wanting to do some kind of justice. At least he's acting in his.
Aha, uh-huh. So why doesn't that play out? So, yes, Avinu.
In the end, that is what happens, though.
In the end, that is what happens. Very good. So, in the end, that is what happens, perhaps. In the end, some people are saved, and most people are destroyed, and the question is whether the people who are saved are the righteous. Right, that is right. That is the question. Yes?
Just as you were speaking, I was thinking to myself, what if Avram... All this is a decoy. Abraham could have had just the righteous saved, but he didn't want to do that. He wanted to save as many people as possible. So then he came up with this, that the righteous should save the wicked as opposed to just saving the righteous. It was a way to save more people.
Could be. Let's hold that thought.
If you look at the introduction to the Nitziv, to Chumash Bereishit, he kind of says that.
Okay, I'm much more cynical than you are. I'm going to try it. I can't take that many more questions right now because we're going to run into Minchah. I really want to get to the Midrashim. So... if you take a look at the Targum Yonatan, which I will not in any way vouch for the antiquity of, but just going to use it as an example of a thing, because right, I have not yet listened to the end of Limor Gottlieb's shir about the Targum Yonatan actually being medieval. It's certainly not Yonatan Baruziel, right? Because he didn't write a Targum on Chumash. So if you want to sound sophisticated, we like to refer to it as pseudo Jonathan. But the question is it an ancient Targum or is it actually a medieval Targum? Rewrite of an ancient Targum. I take no position about that. But you'll see that there's certain ways in which it disambiguates. Right? So he says, right, God said bimemre, that he always puts it in for whatever reason. Let efsharli lemichsayim in Avram. It is impossible for me to hide from Avram what I am doing. And it would be against justice to do it. It is justice that I should not do it until I tell him. Right, so yes, right. So Targum Yonatan seems to think that the reason God says "Amachasena mi Avraham" is that God has an obligation to tell Avraham. Okay, so now we have to try and figure out what's the continuity. What is the obligation to tell Avraham? That Targum Yonatan doesn't tell us. In Pasuk Chaf, it tells us that God speaks to the ministering angels, the Malachei Sheruta, right, and explains exactly what they did wrong. Okay, and finally, what matters to us. Is on at the end of Pasuk Chafei, he says, "Ha'efshar man dedoin kol ara lo ya'avid dina." So what Avram says to write, so the Targum Yonatan has its own nice literary inclusio. It begins by God saying, "It's impossible for me to do this without telling Avram," and in the end, right, Avram says to God, "It's impossible for the judge of the land not to do justice." Okay, let's hold those possibilities in mind. Now I want to take a look at Rashbam. Rashbam says, "Hamechaseh ani me'Avraham mashani rotzel lahafuch et Sodom." Am I hiding from Avraham that which I wish to do, namely to overturn Sodom? Va'ani yodea, but I know shebanav yishmeru derech Hashem, that his sons will guard the way of path. V'yizku lahavi elahem et asher dibir le'Avraham latet lahem eretz Kanaan, and they'll merit doing this. Okay, so I want to ask, what did Rashbam just do? This is a sleight of hand thing, right? This is like a magician. Something just disappeared. I'll read you Rashbam's interpretation again. Rashbam says, am I hiding from Avraham that which I am doing to destroying stone? But I know that his sons will be worship Derech Hashem. Yes. Yes, he skips the whole pasuk. Right? As in Rashbam's Chumash, all that it said was, V'Hashem Amar, HaMechaseh Anemi Avraham Asher Ani Oseh, Ki Yedativ, L'man Asher Yitzaveh Banav V'Beitu Acharav. It's an astonishing thing. Right, a whole pasuk just vanishes. Then Rashbam does a number of other interesting things. He says that what he says is that God is that Vayomer Hashem in the story means Vayomer Hamalach li Avraham. The angel said to Avraham. So in Rashbam's story, the angels and God do not have different existence. The angels are the way in which God appears. So whenever it says God spoke, it meant the angel spoke to Avraham. Okay, and God speaks to the angels. The result of this is, right, the result of this at the end is, I guess I'll try and set it up this way. Right? To me, one of the great comic images of all time, I believe it's a Monty Python episode, is Wuthering Heights. You all know Wuthering Heights? It's an incredible romantic, right, romantic movie, which is played with lots of movies in the swelling, right? Book, yeah, but it's a movie. I'm interested in the movie right now, right? I know it's a book originally, but to get this is a visual image. So you have the music swelling in the background. It's a tremendous romantic scene on the cliff in the middle of the rain, in the middle of the rainstorm. So Monty Python does Wuthering Heights in semaphore, right? So right, the male guy's out on the cliff going like this, and the woman comes out on her balcony, right, holding her flags and going like this. Right, this is a good illustration that sometimes the media may not be the message, but you can't do some messages you can't do in certain media. Right, I want to hold that image though. Sometimes this kind of thing really matters. So here's what Rashbam says: Pasuk Chafei, Hashofet Kol Aretz Sheshlochacha Kan Lo Yaseh Mishpat. This is a dramatic moment. Avram turns to the angel and says, "Shall the judge of all the land, not you, the guy who sent you, right? Shall he not do justice?" And so it becomes, right, what was supposed to be this dramatic moment, right, where Avram is confronting God. Shall the judge of all the land not do justice? It's Rashbam, is Avram talking to the person, right, to the guy in India doing customer services and saying, what, AT&T shall not do justice? But you're a representative of AT&T. How could he possibly not do justice? Right, the whole scene is just destroyed. Absolutely destroyed. This is what I usually talk about as Rashbam. My image of Rashbam's commentary often is, imagine a rich three-dimensional text and a parshan holding a mallet going wham, 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 until the story is perfectly flat. That's essentially what Rashbam does to test the stories, and this is what is like a great example. Shall the one who sent you not do justice? Ribbono shel Olam. Any case, it's beautiful to recognize that the angels are the appearance of God. Okay. So what I want to do right here, we're going to get to the core of what I want to accomplish today. So that's how not to read like Chazal. Right? We read only harmony or only melody. Possibly we mistake the harmony for the melody. And when we have what looks like a really cool dramatic moment, we smash it. Okay, we also, right, and the way we do that is by not recognizing that there is a point to having God and angels as different. Right, as different in the story. So now I want to read the first medrash. The first medrash we have is V'Hashem Amar Hamechaseh Me Avraham. So God, right, I also want you to get that midrashim. Often you read them and because they're taught in grade school, so you think of them as being about the morals and not responding to the text. So let's read the first one, which is going to look like one of these classic moments where they teach you that this is really good morals, and I want you to understand what it's doing in the text.
Just so everyone knows, we're on the page that says Bereishit Rabba on the top.
Yes, oh, I still didn't put page numbers in, did I? Okay, right, Bereishit Rabba, Parsha Vayera, Parsha Mimtet. So God said, am I hiding from Avram? Rabbi Yitzchak began, now the form of, this is a medrash, this I owe my friend and former chairperson, Jeffrey Spitzer, for teaching me much of what I know about Midrash Haggadah. So this is what's called a p'tichta. And a p'tichta is a form of a Midrashic performance art. And it basically functions the same way as the one thing I learned about classical music. So the one thing I learned about classical music in the course, I wasn't paying enough attention, was you have like tonic and a dominant. Right, there are two notes that you open the piece with, and you right, and at the end I think the tonic comes first, the dominant comes second. Is that right? I don't know, right? And then you go back to the dominant, and you have to conclude on the original note, or else if you don't conclude on the original note, then the piece will feel incomplete. So the way a p'tichta works is you start with a pasuk that seems totally irrelevant, then you quote something about the parsha, you resolve the thing about the parsha, and then you go back and resolve the thing about the different quote you started with, So in this case, the opening quote is a pasuk in Mishle, Zecher tzadik livrecha v'shem rasha'im yirakev. Okay, that's the pasuk. Zecher tzadik livrecha. Rabbi Yitzchak says, anybody who mentions a tzadik and doesn't bless him violates a mitzvah aseh. Which mitzvah aseh? Zecher tzadik livrecha. In the same way we mention the wicked, you should curse them. V'shem yirim yirakev. Okay, we have a whole interesting discussions and metaphors about what this is. The end of the story is Rav Huna, in the name of Rabbi Acha, says, aha, but all the stories, all the things that you've quoted so far to prove that Zecher Tzadik Livracha are about the entire Jewish people as a whole. How do you know that even when you mention an individual person, you have to bless them? And the answer is, Shne'emar, V'Hashem Amar HaMechaseh Ani Me'Avraham Asher Ani Yoseh V'Avraham Hayo Yeh L'Goy Gadol Atzum. So what's the Medrash doing? New?
Turning that from a reason to a bracha.
Exactly right. The Medrash has the same problem that Rashbam does. What does the Avraham will be a great nation have to do with am I hiding from Avraham, which I'm saying? The Medrash's answer is because God follows the rules of human derech eretz. When you mention a righteous person, you have to bless them. Right, so that intervening pasuk is just God blessing Avraham. Now, this is consistently as an approach, and the Medrash believes that Chumash, it's a literary approach to Chumash, that it's legitimate to say that things happen in Chumash in order to model the way in which human beings should behave towards others. Which is why the parsha begins by saying that God appeared to Avraham, and then the angels appeared, which Rashi says, following Chazal, is because it's supposed to teach us that that mitzvot ben adam l'chaveiro override religious experience. So the Midrash is a common thing. You can agree with it or not agree with it, but the Midrashic way of reading Chumash is that it's legitimate to explain features of the biblical text as saying that they're there to model proper human etiquette. So the opening story is there to model that interpersonal mitzvot override religious experience. And this is here to tell you that when you mention the righteous, you have to bless them. Now, what I want to get you is this is the same problem that Rashbam is dealing with. Rashbam deals with it by ignoring it. The Medrash deals with it by explaining it. Whether you like the explanation or not, necessarily, it's very cool. Okay, that's just warm up. Now we're going to get into the actual story. Next page, the letter bet on top. Davar Acher, Sod Hashem Lireyav. Okay, the secret of God is to those who fear Him. That's a fun pasuk. Does any of you know what the two most prominent secrets of God are? One of them is a little off color. So the first is how long it takes men and women to have intimate relationships. And the other is what it feels like to have gout. I can talk at some other point about why those are the two secrets that God chooses particularly to reveal to those who fear Him. That's probably not what we're talking about here, but those are the two gemaras in which Sod Hashem Lireyav comes up. Okay. So, but the Midrash is a totally different take. B'tchila haya sod Hashem l'reyav. Originally, the secrets of God went to those who fear Him. V'achar kach le'yisharim. But then they went from the Reim to the Yisharim. Because there's another pasuk in Mishle which says, V'et Yisharim sodo. And God's sod is with the Yisharim. So you could say, which one is it? The Reim or the Yisharim? The answer is it's sequential. V'achar kach le'nevi'im. And after it went to the Yesharim, then God started revealing His secrets to the Nevi'im. Right? And this is the pasuk which is really key, the pasuk in Gimel, which says, Ki lo yaseh Hashem Elokim davar, God will do nothing. Ki im gilah sodo al avadav Nevi'im, without revealing His secret to His servants, the prophets. And then we say, well, Avram, He's a Yirei Elokim, we know that from after the Akedah. He's a Yashar, because we have a pasuk in Shir HaShirim that we interpret as relating to Avraham, Meshurim Ha'ivucha, and he's a Navi, because it says, Hashem V'Yishe Navihu, Ve'eni Megalelo, and I am not going to reveal to him. Okay, what is this Midrash doing? Right, this Midrash is an amazing, amazing, I want to be real, it's an amazing inversion of the way you almost certainly read the text. You almost certainly read the text. Tell me if I'm right. Yes, Eli.
I guess you're saying that instead of reading Vadim Chasa as a question, you think that I will hide
it. No, close, but not close. The normal way of reading the text. Yeah.
Assume Abraham talks to God because he's a Navi, or rather, he's a Navi because God talks to him. And this is making it the other way around.
God talks to him because he's a Navi. Not bad at all. Not what I had in mind, but not bad at all. But close. So let me tell you what I had in mind. Headline is probably when you read the Pasuk, what you think is. The problem here that we're trying to figure out here is, why does God have to tell, right, if you're in the public, that God is saying, this is an unusual thing that I have to tell Avraham. And what we have to try and figure out is, why is it important for God to tell Avraham this? Right, that's what the Targum Yonatan says, right? This is, right, why is it necessary for me to tell Avraham? And we have to try and construct some reason that this is different than everything else. Everything else God can make his own decisions about, what he tells and what he doesn't tell. But this one, not. Right, and that's essentially that Rashbam pulls it out. That's basically, right, Rashbam, at the end of it said, I gave Avram the land, how can I destroy his land? Right, so the premise of the story is that God doesn't have to tell anyone else. God never has to tell human beings anything. God's not accountable. But here, there's something about the relationship with Avram that makes it necessary for God to tell him. Comes the Midrash, yes?
As Michael was saying, Maybe he's just saying, do I need to tell Avraham? As in, maybe Avraham already knows.
So let's push it even further. What the Midrash says is that God always tells prophets everything, at least everything that's relevant to them. So the question here is not, why does God have to tell Avraham? The question is, why would God have